Hey everyone, welcome to the 374th episode of the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and your co-host,
Kevin Toefel.
And we have a lot to talk about this week. My goodness. We're going to be talking about iRobot's new OS. We've got a merger in satellite IoT land. We've got a privacy-protecting smart home system from Carnegie Mellon. We've got a telco that wants to shift to being a techco. Can it make it? We also have a proposal for ARM. More news on the John Deere right to repair front. We've got some smart motorized blinds that y'all might be interested in if you still have blinds. And an update from Amazon about its cloud cam service. Kevin also reviewed the latest Ecobee smart thermostats, just like he said he would, so we'll be talking about that. And our guest this week is Ron Rock, who is the CEO of Microshare.io. He's talking to us about the next enterprise IoT packages that are going to sell. For a while, it was all about cleaning and people counting related to COVID. And the next package of products are going to be about ESG, environmental, social, and governance. Woo! So all of this awaits you, plus a message from our sponsor, the LoRaWAN World Expo, coming up in July. And now let's go to a message from another one of our sponsors. This week's sponsor is Influx Data. At Influx Data, creator of the time series data platform, InfluxDB, they believe in putting the developer first. They built their time series data platform with tools so developers don't have to make wholesale changes to their product or application just to use InfluxDB. Developers can code in their language of choice, using their preferred tools, and wherever they are building applications, in the cloud, on-premise, or locally. If you build IoT, analytics, and cloud applications, you should check out InfluxDB. It has a powerful API and toolset, a high-performance time series engine, and a community of developers in both cloud and open source. Get started for free and learn more at www.influxdata.com/stacy-iot. Okay, guess what, y'all? I made it back from Dallas. I'm still...
Yay!
Yeah, 2 weeks in Dallas. I mean, it was a lot, y'all.
I mean, there are worse places to be, for one thing, but I am so thrilled that you're back home. We spoke earlier in the week just to prep for this show, and it was like the first thing you said, I'm home, and I saw that background of your office, and I was so happy for you, because that's like being in a, almost like a prison? I know you were in a nice hotel.
I was in a 4-star hotel. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, such an ordeal. I was like, well, was it though?
I know, but
I missed my family.
Being in captivity is what I feel is the challenge there, right?
It was a small room
for everyone.
No fresh air.
Yeah. I'd be fine because I could live in a tiny house, but my wife won't let me. Well, I take that back. She will let me. She just won't live there with me.
I wouldn't live with you in a tiny house. And we've worked together for decades. Maybe not decades.
This is true.
But a long time.
Well,
all right. So I'm home. I'm still a little congested. COVID, I did not get the mild case. I mean, I did because I didn't go to the hospital, but I was seriously ill.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad.
Still feeling.
So you got home and did you notice your floors? Was that the first thing you noticed?
Why would I notice my floors?
Because we're about to talk about floors and robot vacuums.
Oh, missing the segue. I love it. No, I did not notice my floors. I actually noticed that we had installed a countertop and a backsplash. And I was like, oh, that happened. Cool.
COVID remodel
while I was gone. I did not notice my floors, but I do love my Roomba. And more importantly, my husband, who is I kid you not, y'all, he collects vacuum cleaners. He also loves the Roomba. It's really weird. My child the other day was like, you know how some old guys, they put up guitars on their walls? You could do that with your collection of vacuums. And I thought it was hilarious.
I collect Beatles photos, like original photos, and put them on my walls. I don't collect devices.
Yeah, my husband really just likes a clean floor. So
he must.
I don't know if he's going to be excited about this, but iRobot has basically introduced the iRobot OS. It is a new operating system for their vacuums, but it's not just for their vacuums. The idea is that this will be, it's kind of like a smart home OS. And I think it's really sneaky that iRobot's coming in here. And they've got two things going for them. One, they've got a robot that can roam around your home and do cool things.
One that people want to use and buy.
Yes.
Unlike the, what's the Amazon one called?
Astro?
Astro. I don't know anybody who is dying to get one after reading reviews.
Yeah. And Astro is like $1,500 and you have to have an invite. The $700 fanciest Roomba without the like giant jetpack suction thing. It's a pricey thing, but we do know that it works. Anyway, what they're doing is they're actually trying to use the fact that the robot knows what's in your home based on a camera and the mapping capabilities, but it's also going to start the idea here. This isn't happening right now. It's going to also allow the robot to say, oh my gosh, the air is so not high quality in here. So turn on this air purifier, which is company Aeris is the name of the company iRobot purchased last year. So they're going to tie those devices together. And then eventually they're going to tie into things like, oh, there's an Amazon device over here. Oh, there's a sensor over here.
There's a pile of pet poop over here.
Yes, it would know that.
I know.
I really think this is smart because iRobot for the longest time has come at the home with both utility, people do like a robot vacuum, and privacy. They did get in trouble when they integrated with Google a couple years ago because people thought that iRobot was sharing data with Google, but it turns out that wasn't the case. The point here is I would actually trust this, and I really hope to see... I mean, they're saying all the right words. They're saying things like, hey, the problem with AI and robotics isn't better AI. It's that they don't have context.
Bingo. That's the word, context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it, man. And that's also part of my idea that like we should not have robots in the smart home. The smart home itself should be a robot. And like even my Roomba is just an appendage over this larger robot. So if iRobot can make that OS that turns my home into a robot, I would be down for that. I think.
So would I. I don't know if my Roomba, because we went kind of the low-cost Roomba route of like $300, I don't know that mine will get this feature set or all of the features, but I love what they're trying to do here. They say it's already able to identify and avoid 80 common objects. And with the context, you could theoretically be able to say, go clean in front of the television. Maybe you spill popcorn.
I can say that today.
What?
I tell it to, I can set what I do. And this happened prior to the launch of this, but I noticed after it mapped my house, and I don't know if it noticed because there were like more crumbs in this area or if it noticed that it was labeled kitchen. But a couple weeks after I got it, it was like, hey, you have a lot of crumbs underneath this kitchen counter. Would you like me to set up a zone to clean extra here?
Hmm.
And I was like, sure. And then once I did that, I basically would tell Google, ask Terrence to clean underneath the kitchen counter, and it would go there, and it would clean. And it was amazeballs.
Hold on a second. Terrence?
Oh, Terrence is the name of my Roomba.
Do all of your husband's robot vacuums have names?
So I named Terrence. And, well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they're all girls' names. Who knows?
We call our Sweepy.
Sweepy.
I guess naming these things is a thing. After
yeah,
all.
Yeah. iRobot tells us that, yes, people love to anthropomorphize their robots.
Oh, yeah.
Woo. All right. Moving right along. We've got a merger in IoT satellite land. A company called AstroCast has acquired Hiber. And AstroCast is a, they call it a nano satellite. It's a small satellite company. They acquired a company called Hiber, which was going to build its own small satellites constellation for IoT and then decided no, it was going to work with one of the bigger satellite providers and just offer IoT as a service to other people. This is not a great deal. Basically, what this is the rationalization of all these small sat IoT companies. So we're going to see a lot more of these deals, but this particular deal gives AstroCast, they're like, yeah, we get direct to end user sales strategy. We're going to have more products. We've got a remote oil well monitoring solution now. We've got asset tracking,
which has customers that that Hiber has. Sure.
Yeah, so they're basically buying some business, and Hiber's like, yeah, we can't make it alone. We don't have a differentiating point of view. Oh, I should add that we should see more of this. We'll expect to see more of this on the satellite business side.
Mm-hmm.
More M&A, possibly some bankruptcies. I don't know. All right, moving along. Peekaboo, Kevin.
Oh, peekaboo to you too.
What is peekaboo?
So I'll explain what peekaboo is in a second, but I want to say that we've talked in the past, a couple times in the past few years about research projects or approaches that will help consumers keep their smart home data more private. Some of those approaches have used other speakers to listen for certain things that you say. And there's been a whole bunch of approaches using algorithms, whatever. This one is unique in the grand scheme of things. And it's actually very logical. I don't think it's going to have a mainstream following, but basically Peekaboo, it's a hub-based approach to provide more control and transparency in your smart home data, giving the consumer the power to control that data as opposed to the device makers and the platform providers. So what this is, it's a small, I guess I'll call it a small server, or you call it a hub, made in the Human Computer Interaction Institute at Scilab.
Yeah, we see a lot of stuff from Carnegie Mellon Scilab. Oh, yeah. They do a lot of privacy research in the smart home. We love those guys.
And basically, you could think of this as kind of like a firewall for your data, but you control what data can go through this device out to your cloud service providers, you know, your Googles, your Apples, your Amazons, whoever it might be, Hue, Ecobee, et cetera. So it kind of sits in the middle of your smart home's devices and the internet. I like that approach. I don't think people want to have like a server like that. I don't think they want another hub to manage.
What I was thinking is, what if this turns into something like on Android or Apple, the privacy controls for different apps? So if there was a standard or, you know, enough of a momentum around it, you could actually be like, when you brought your Hues into your Peekaboo system, it would say, hey, this app wants to share all this following data. Mm-hmm. And then if it could tell you why it was doing that, then you could pick it that one time and then it'd be okay. The challenge comes in when you bring in additional sensors, like, do you want to share? I guess you'd have to check off, like, I'll share it with Madam A, I'll share it with blah, blah, blah. I actually think this is kind of precedented.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a good example. In fact, in the research, they say that if a developer of a device wants to gather some information, they use the example of the number of hours spent watching smart TV in a single day, you could go on your Peekaboo hub and you could allow that. Or you could say, no, don't do that. So yes, it would be like a permissions-based approach. I kind of wish, though, it didn't need that intermediary hardware. And the problem is, none of the device makers or platform providers are going to go out of their way and enable this without the hardware, because they could. They absolutely could.
Well, maybe instead you could make it Matter certified. It would work with everything. And you could just pick a Matter certified privacy-centric hub, and it would work with these things locally. It could happen.
It could.
Let's be optimistic.
Again, I said it's a logical approach, and I do like it. I'm just, I don't know, maybe I'm being too pessimistic on the implementation.
No. If I look back over the, how long have we been? 2013? So almost the 10 years that we've been doing this, Kevin, we're always too optimistic.
That's fair. Yeah.
We're never pessimistic enough.
Yeah. Remember when we said Bixby was going to rule the world? No, I'm just kidding. We never said that.
Kevin said it. I'll throw you under the bus. No. Oh. We did not. No, I would never. So this is pretty cool. This is just a research project. We'll link to it. You can check it out. And maybe we'll get the Scilabs people again on the show. I always like them. All right. Moving across the pond, as it were, to BT. BT is a telco in the UK, and they've decided they're going to move from being a telco provider to a techco.
BT means business.
Yeah. So they're actually investing £100 million. That's almost $125 million in this strategy. And basically, it's all about IoT. They're basically like, you know what? We have the connectivity piece. We also have been investing in the AI and IoT piece. And now we're just going to put all that together for people. You see this with the telcos here in the US. AT&T and Verizon have both been doing these things. So it's mostly just, sure, telcos are trying to become, you know, cloud tech providers. They wanted to be a cloud provider for a while. They realized that's not going to work. So now they're going for like this digital transformation Accenture-like consulting thing. And, you know, maybe that'll work.
Throughout their history, telcos have not just wanted to be pipes, right? They wanted to take the pipe and add value to it so they can make more money. So yeah, not surprising IoT-centric approach here, because what else are they going to do? Crypto? I don't know.
Probably. In other business transformations, we have a solution for ARM.
I came up with this, by the way, before I saw the news item. I just want to point that out.
Yeah. I'm proud of you, Kevin. So we all know that ARM did not get acquired by NVIDIA for $40 billion. ARM's customers were like, heck no. But Cristiano Amon, who is the CEO of Qualcomm, actually told the Financial Times that Qualcomm wouldn't mind investing in ARM and they could join forces with other chip makers to, like Intel or SK Hynix, to actually create a consortium to buy ARMs. Not to buy ARMs, to buy ARM. I'm just going to call that a congestion error right there. Yeah.
I like this idea. And not just because I said when Stacy said, oh, ARM's thinking about investing in, I'm sorry.
No, Qualcomm's thinking about investing.
Thinking about investing in ARM. I'm like, they should just have a consortium because then all of the chip makers could be a part of it. And even though theoretically everybody owns ARM, really nobody owns ARM would have a competitive advantage like NVIDIA would have had, right? And she said that that's exactly what they're going to do, I think. So
all of this is speculative, but the CEO of Qualcomm has talked about it. Apparently, the CEO of SK Hynix, which is a Korean chip maker, they actually talked about forming a consortium. Intel CEO talked to Samsung CEO about doing this. So this is clearly like, they're like, well, what do we do with ARM? SoftBank owns ARM. It's in a spin. It's trying to, you know, make it public again.
I think it's the best possible outcome.
It might be.
Yeah.
All right. It's like socialism for chips.
Don't say that. Don't say the S word.
Okay. We've got news from John Deere. A couple weeks ago, we talked about, a lot of people thought this was really cool that apparently the Russian army stole a bunch of John Deere harvesting and combine equipment from a Ukrainian dealership. And when John Deere realized that they had been A, stolen from, and B, that it was Russians, they just turned off the tractors. They remotely disabled the tractors, which they can do. And I said, hey, that's a really cool story, like in this particular context, but it's also really scary when you think about a company that has a HQ in a particular region being able to remotely control in devices around the world, right? Mm-hmm. What if the United States got mad at Canada and turned off all the, ordered John Deere to turn off all the Canadian tractors? That would be awful. Well, here's a little, little wrinkle on this. This guy who sounds like a real winner, I'm not going to lie, this Jared Wilson, he was a farmer in Missouri, and basically he had to go to the FTC and he accused his John Deere dealer of basically saying, stop complaining to me about everything or I will not fix your tractor. And because I have to fix your tractor, you'll just have a broken tractor, buddy.
Yeah, he was considered not a profitable customer because of all of his issues that he complained about, but because he has no other recourse since he, because of a lack of right to repair, what else is he to do?
Yeah, so once again, we see that putting all of this power into one person or one company's hands, in this case, it was a manager at a dealership, it's probably not the right way to go. And we, if we're going to do it, if we're not going to, you know, follow along with right to repair, which we're getting there in some cases, that really puts people in a very vulnerable position because their stuff is software controlled. And if we're not going to have right to repair, then we need some pretty clear recourse to go through if something like this happens, because complaining to the FTC is not someone's first recourse. It's not like you're going to call them up and suddenly your problem is going to be solved. That's going to take like 2 to 3 years. It's not an ideal solution.
Yeah. And as a farmer, you don't even have 2 to 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. And another aspect about this that I'd never thought of before in the story about this, the farmer said when he began in 2013, there were 3 different repair shops within 30 minutes of his farm. Now there's only one. The next closest one is 80 miles away, and getting a tractor 80 miles down the road is certainly not inexpensive and hard to do. So it's interesting to me. I wonder if anybody has looked at this particular John Deere situation in terms of geography, logistics, and accessibility.
Yeah. Well, if you have giant companies owning most of the farms, it makes sense that you would consolidate your dealerships and you wouldn't necessarily need them. Consolidation is not always good, y'all. Hey, let's go back to the smart house for a second and talk about a product that doesn't get a lot of love. How many of y'all have blinds?
I have blinds.
Specifically, you do?
I do. Not smart blinds, but I have blinds.
Well, you might soon have smart blinds if you want. So Somfy has created a retrofit. It is called the Clever Tilt Blind Motorization Kit. And what you basically do is you take your existing blinds, you'll take them off the wall, you'll replace the tilt mechanism with a little Somfy motor, and Somfy makes all kinds of motors. And then you put the blinds back and you use the Somfy remote to control this tilt mechanism. And look, Somfy is expensive.
I was just going to say, because I'm looking at prices right now, because I do have some tilt blinds that they need replacing, and I was probably going to get like roller shades, partially because I prefer roller shades, but also because I know there are motorization and smart options for those. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, these are $170, $180 each.
Yeah.
I'll just pull the string for that much money.
Well, the idea here is that you could tie it into eventually other things and like it could follow the sun, right? So you could like create a schedule, or it could like tie it into a sensor eventually. But yeah, they're expensive.
Those are good points. I'll still pull the string.
Yeah. But I will say, Somfy does work. They have the MyLink system, which is expensive. And I will tell you, it doesn't support a lot of Somfy channels. Anyway, I have Somfy blinds and I've actually purchased them 3 times now because they're really good. They're high quality. They're very quiet. They can move a lot of weight. So it's really useful. But tying them into your smart home is an expensive proposition, is all I would say there.
It took you 10 years to get me to spend the big bucks to go Lutron. You got another 10 years before I go buy Somfy.
Yeah, I don't know if you would need that. I mean, again, I've always had wall-to-wall windows in my homes.
Yeah, I don't have
that. So that's why, and you don't. So if you have normal blinds, I don't know if you would have to do this. But if you're in the market for this and you have the funds and you like your blinds, like you're not going to replace them, this is an option.
Yeah.
There you go. We're letting you know.
All right. Here goes an option.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us what's happening?
Yeah, it's the smart home market. One new device comes in, one old device goes away. For people who bought Amazon's Cloud Cam security camera, you have until December 2nd before it stops working. They're just going to delete all the recordings and the hardware will literally not work. That's it. Nothing.
Yeah, this was part of the Amazon Key program, which I guess is not really a thing anymore, is it?
I'm sure it's advertised, but I don't think I don't think millions of people use it.
Yeah, this was where Amazon, had a camera and a door lock that worked with the program that would let delivery people put stuff inside your front hallway.
And therein lies the problem.
Yeah, or wherever you, if you have a front hallway, if you don't, then they just put it inside your living room. So yeah, that was, a lot of people did not embrace that concept, apparently, and it makes sense that they would.
I will say, unlike many other companies, Amazon is kind of making good on this by letting current Cloud Cam owners redeem an offer for a free Blink Mini Cam. So you get
if they are actively using their Cloud Cam.
Yes. Yes. And Key Edition owners can also get an Echo device with that as well.
Okay. Stuff goes off. You stop supporting stuff all the time. That makes sense. 5 years is not a terrible amount of time.
No.
They apparently stopped selling them in 2019. So, okay. Amazon's doing things pretty right here. Mm-hmm. They're giving you more than 6 months notice, saying, hey, it's roughly 6 months notice. This is going to end. They're offering you an alternative for free if you're actually using it. So I can't be upset by this.
No. They're even giving a 1-year subscription for the Blink deal that they have.
Yeah. So
they're going over and above on this one.
I'm pro this.
Yeah.
All right. And now let's talk about air conditioning.
Yes, because Kevin's died 2 weeks ago. Just in time for my Ecobee Smart Thermostat Premium review. Luckily, I was able to fix my air conditioning. We may have a story on fixing things around the house in the very near future, because a lot of things can be fixed on the cheap.
If you've got the right to repair it, you should repair it.
You are correct. That's absolutely correct. But after fixing the air conditioner, which was very timely because it's been like feeling like 99 degrees here lately in Pennsylvania, I was able to unbox and install the Ecobee Smart Premium Thermostat that comes with a remote sensor. A company announced this 2 weeks ago. It's a $249.99 thermostat. I should note they also have a lower model that's new. It is the Smart Thermostat Enhanced. It does not have some of the features that the premium one has, and I will point that out as we go through this little quick review. I'm just going to say I'm having a hard time finding anything not to like about it. And I'm saying that as a current Ecobee third generation owner, maybe it's even second generation. So my Ecobee is a couple years old, doesn't have a microphone and speaker, which this one does. The enhanced one does not, I should point out. The device looks much nicer. It has a zinc frame around it. The screen is slightly bigger. It is higher resolution. You can see more on the display. And everybody, including Stacey, will be happy to know the crappy user interface of changing the temperature is so much better.
Good Lord. Yeah,
this alone is almost worth $250, people.
Yes. I am surprised that you would replace, because I think of my thermostat really is just kind of like a cool, I was surprised. I feel like my thermostat is just chugging along just fine. But you made a couple points, the air quality monitor, the change in UI. And you also said, and this was the most surprising to me, is that you felt more comfortable in your house.
Yes. You mentioned sensors. And I'm going to point out that this uses new millimeter wave sensors, which basically use a specific radio frequency as radar. And it uses this in the thermostat only, not in the remote sensors. I want to be very clear about that. So it's much better at detecting movement and detection. We've used Norm to try and have him set it off, and it hasn't happened. I cannot sneak up on the thermostat, even from around a corner. I have tried. The radar waves must be bouncing off me and bouncing back. I do not know. It seems magical if you're into that kind of thing, which after an hour of trying to fake it out, I was into that kind of thing. The sensors are also improved from measuring temperature. And I say I'm more comfortable in the home because when we would have the air on a typical work day, my wife works literally right next to the thermostat downstairs and I'm upstairs, we might manually set the air conditioning to like 74 because it just didn't seem cool enough in the house. When we do it this thermostat, it feels noticeably cooler. And yes, I'm going to say that it's using more electricity in that regard because the air conditioner is running longer. I don't mind as long as I'm comfortable and I'm willing to pay the extra electricity. I just thought the old one was doing its job, but it obviously wasn't doing it well enough. So that's been a huge improvement. The remote sensor, as I said, does not use millimeter wave. It does have presence and motion detection, as did the old one. But here's the big deal to me anyway. These sensors are now in the thermostat and the remote are now exposed so that you can use them as individual sensor devices. So now I very quickly have set up an automation to, when anybody goes into the master bedroom, which is where that remote sensor is, turn on the bedroom light as long as the sun is mostly down. And it's working fine. It's working really, really well. So now I've added more automation that I didn't expect to add, but I don't need to like buy individual sensors now because I can just reuse or repurpose this one for another purpose, which is good.
See, right here, what we're seeing is the promise of Matter coming. I mean, I know that Ecobee is part of the Matter working group. I was going to say consortium. But what this sort of thing is where I hope we keep going. Because like I currently have like a couple different, like I have a Hue motion sensor for my Hue stuff. I have a security motion sensor running around. And I'm like, ugh, stupid.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I mean, a sensor is a sensor. I mean, it should just be able to be used across different devices for automations and such. It doesn't matter what its other functions are and who makes it. So I agree. And that's handy right there. You mentioned air quality. And I'm just going to backtrack up to about a month ago when I reviewed the $199 AirThings Wave Pollution device, which measures humidity, particulate matter, and
carbon dioxide.
Yeah, it's probably carbon dioxide. That's all it did, though. It just measures those things. It doesn't really integrate with anything other than IFT. There's no smart home integration. It just tells me I've got bad air, so I can do something about it. The new Ecobee Premium, again, not the enhanced, has indoor quality sensors to measure VOCs and carbon dioxide. It will not integrate with other smart devices, such as purifiers and fans and such. It will work if you have some other wired device on your HVAC system, such as a ventilator or dehumidifier or humidifier. So you can set that up. I don't have any of those on my HVAC system, so I couldn't test it. And if you don't have any of those, that's okay because the monitoring is nice, and you also get alerts, just like you would have with the $200 AirWave that I mentioned. So for $250, to me, this is a far better buy because you're getting so much more. I also, real quick, before I forget, never had a thermostat with a speaker and microphone because I never thought I needed it. You know what? It's pretty good. I don't mind paying the extra to have that. I hooked it up with Siri and HomeKit, and then Barb can sit next to it and say, open the garage door when somebody's, you know, a delivery is coming or something, and it'll just do it just like if she was talking to her phone or her watch. So it streams music to Bluetooth music and Spotify, but I wouldn't use it for that personally. So overall, I mean, everybody's different. Everybody has a different home, but I will be spending the $250 out of pocket once I return this review unit to upgrade our Ecobee. It is well worth it to me.
Wow.
Yippers. All
right. Maybe I'll consider it. Okay. You did mention the lower priced one, right?
Yeah. So $199.95.
Okay. So save $50, no speaker, no microphone.
Doesn't look as nice. You don't get a remote sensor. I mean, you just get so much more for the $50.
Spend the $50.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, that concludes the news segment of the show, but let's talk about the Internet of Things podcast hotline. This is the segment of the show where we hear from y'all. You can give us a call and we may answer your questions. You can also just tell us your thoughts by calling us at 512-623-7424. And we might play your voicemail on the air. And everyone who calls is entered to win a prize of our choice. Every month we do a drawing. You have to be in North America to win. Sorry. But we actually just did a drawing for the month of May, and our winner for May, and they win an Ember coffee mug, which is like one of my favorite things. Who is that, Kevin?
That would be Nicholas from South Carolina.
Congratulations, Nicholas. I will reach out to you to send that over. For the month of June, I haven't decided on a prize yet, but start calling us because it's going to be something awesome. I'm thinking something to do with lawn care, if we're being honest, because it's summer.
It is summer in this hemisphere.
Yeah. So, and you know, we can't give it down to you in South America or Australia. So anyway, we also have a question, this week's question from Ron. Let's hear it.
Hello, Stacy. My name is Ron Gaynor. My question is, I've been a smart home automation user for the last 30 years, currently using Insteon devices, which, as you know, has closed down and the servers have shut down, leaving the app and my products useless, other than manual turning on and off. I'm at a beginning stages now. Instead of using a bridge hub to allow these to voice activate with Alexa or Google and so forth, to instead just put in all new devices and a different protocol. I've also switched from an Android phone to an Apple phone, and now wanted to know if I should be considering HomeKit, if I should look at Zigbee, Thread-type devices, Z-Wave devices. I'm a little bit confused in terms of what is the best direction to now go moving forward. Any help would be much appreciated. Thank you again.
I guess I'll take this one because you don't use an iPhone, Stacy.
That is true.
Yes, you got me to switch to Lutron after 10 years, but I have still not gotten her to switch to an iPhone. That's fine.
Someone has to be on the Google ecosystem.
And that someone has to be you.
I'm feeling like you win because HomeKit, man, all right.
The switch over, it's been over a year now. I'm very happy. And I think Ron's going to be happy too. The high level answer I would say is Ron is heading in completely the right direction. Go with HomeKit since you have an Apple phone. It just works really, really well. You didn't have this option with Android, obviously. And while you can, you know, use Google, Amazon, SmartThings, or whatever with either Android or iPhone, I really think you're heading in the right direction here with HomeKit. Now, what I would say as far as new devices, and it sounds like you're preparing to spend some money and replace a lot of your older things, and that makes sense to me, I would hold off. If there's anything that you feel you need and it's already HomeKit approved, then I would get it because it's just going to work and it's going to work really well. But if you're thinking about Zigbee, Z-Wave, or anything else, I would wait until Matter comes out. And that shouldn't be long. It's the fall.
Which means a lot of devices are already announced as being like, these are going to upgrade to Matter. So you could also look for that.
Right. You could and take the chance. And we've even heard the announcement of some Matter bridges or hubs that will let non-Matter devices work with Matter devices. So I'm just thinking, don't spend all your money right now. Take a look at what's in the HomeKit ecosystem. Get the devices that are there that will meet your needs. And for other devices, if you can live without them for a little bit longer, and by a little bit, I'm saying 3 to 6 months, I would wait. And then I would wait to see what happens when the matter spec is finalized and approved and devices are coming out and so on, because that's going to save you money in the long run, I think, by buying things now that may not work as well in the future.
Yes, I agree. So, Ron, hopefully this helps you. And as an added bonus, you can stick all this on your Christmas list and people can buy it for you.
Yes, yes.
If you're a dad, it's always hard to find dad gifts. So this would be helpful for everyone.
Yep.
All right. If you have a question for us, give us a call at 512-623-7424 and you will be entered to win our June prize, which as of yet has not been named. And thanks everyone who called for the month of May. Y'all are awesome. That concludes this section of the show, but please stay tuned for our guest, Ron Rock, the CEO of Microshare.io. We're going to be talking about what's next in enterprise IoT spending after all the COVID spending. But first, a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is the LoRaWAN World Expo. Hey everyone, we are taking a quick break from the Internet of Things podcast for a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is the LoRaWAN World Expo. And I have Donna Moore, who is the CEO and chairwoman of the LoRa Alliance, here to talk to us about the LoRaWAN World Expo coming up at the Palais de Congrès in Paris on July 6th and 7th of this year. Donna, can you just first tell us why LoRaWAN is the leading LPWAN?
So LoRaWAN is the de facto LPWAN standard globally because it was designed from the beginning as a secure, open, interoperable standard. And over the past 7 years, our LoRa Alliance members and the global LoRaWAN ecosystem have achieved so many incredible goals, which has positioned LoRaWAN as the market leader. Let me just list a few so that everyone can get the breadth and depth of the accomplishments. LoRaWAN is now a mature technology that has been officially recognized by ITU as an international standard. We have the largest, most diverse member ecosystem, and that includes all participants of the value chain. We have the most deployed networks worldwide and the only LPWAN with network options like public, private, satellite, community, and hybrid with roaming capabilities and global roaming. We have the most globally deployed solutions and the largest at-scale deployments. We have the most multi-RAN deployments with Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, 5G, RFID, OMS, DLMS, and it goes on. We have the most certified LPWAN devices with the greatest choice of vendors and the greatest diversity of devices on the market. And one last thing I'll say is that we have a flexible business model with either CapEx or OpEx options. So those are just some of the reasons why LoRaWAN is the leading LPWAN standard.
And what is the LoRaWAN World Expo?
Well, the LoRaWAN World Expo is the largest LoRaWAN event brought to you by the LoRa Alliance. We have the theme of Discover the Power of LoRaWAN, and the focus is on LoRaWAN development, deployment, and how to drive business performance and profits for our members and their customers.
And what will attendees learn at the expo?
The LoRaWAN World Expo is the best opportunity in 2022 to hear from the brightest minds in the IoT industry and a network with LoRaWAN market leaders to collaborate and partner on business opportunities, which is really how to drive your IoT business forward. You know, the focus will be on social responsibilities, and attendees will discover the power of LoRaWAN in helping to solve the world's most pressing challenges for people, planet, and profits.
So where can people go to find more information about the LoRaWAN World Expo?
For more information and to register, go to www.lora-alliance.org. And don't forget that the LoRaWAN World Expo will be in person at the Palais de Congress in Paris, July 6th and 7th. And I really hope to see everyone there.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and today's guest is Ron Rock, the CEO and co-founder of Microshare.io. Hello, Ron. How are you today?
Hey, Stacey. I'm great. How are you doing?
I am excellent. Still recovering from COVID, got some nasal action. So sorry for everybody who's probably like, oh, that's not Stacy. Gross. I'll be back eventually.
Excellent is a good place to be, though.
I know. I feel it. I am very excited to talk to you. I feel like MicroShare first came up for me like 2016, 2017 at Microsoft. Y'all are a Microsoft partner. And y'all are doing some really cool stuff with sensors. And just real quick, why don't you tell people what y'all do at MicroShare? Because I know it's not actually sensors.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. I'm happy to. My first thing, I was going to jump into the podcast and say, we're not a sensor company. That's not what we do. We're a bunch of software guys. My partners and I have been in the software business now since the early 90s. We've designed and built some of the biggest software systems in the world. And when we thought about IoT, it's all about the data. People want to talk about hardware. They want to talk about sensors and backhaul and gateways and cloud. And no doubt about it, that stuff's really important. But the reason we're doing all of this is because we need the data. We need the data to drive more efficient organizations, better safety, better quality of life, extend the quality of life. And all of that is because we need the data. MicroShare, we focus on getting our clients the data as quickly, as cost-effectively, as efficiently as possible. We sell directly to the businesses, business solutions. I like to say tongue-in-cheek, most of my customers can't spell IoT. They don't know or care that that's what they're buying. They're buying the business solution, which is wrapped in data.
Okay, so you're building software for these businesses. Are you acting like as a systems integrator for companies that have the sensors and hardware and connectivity? How does that work?
So most customers today don't have any of the above. They're just starting to get into IoT. And specifically, I should have mentioned, within the whole universe of IoT, we're focusing on commercial real estate. So we're not doing residential. But we're doing hospitals without touching the patient. We're doing airports without touching planes. We're focusing on that non-regulated space that has been very underserved, really, since the beginning of IoT starting to happen. So within that space, we bundle together the best of breed. We pick industry-leading sensors. We pick the right gateways, the right backhaul. We work very much with Microsoft. We used to work a lot with Amazon. So typically, when we're talking to customers, they don't have any of this in place. What they do have in place are the traditional building management systems that are many times 10, 15, 20 years old. And these are the systems that are running the security system, the HVAC systems, maybe the backup generator. So really very little data compared to the kind of information they need today to drive significant decisions.
Got it. Do you integrate with those old building management systems or do you recommend people just take them out?
We absolutely can integrate with them. And frankly, we can even integrate with other more modern sensors.
All right. Let's talk about when you decided you needed to go down this path. I remember all the way back when I started covering this space, I really thought we could develop these horizontal layers for enterprise and commercial IoT. And things could, it would be easy to pull stuff together. That clearly did not happen. There was just too much proprietary technology in place. The use cases were very different and industry specific. So people had to develop these custom packages and kind of consolidate where they thought they would go in the business. When did you realize that that was the way to go?
Well, there's really two sides to that story, Stacy. The first one is on the data side. We grew up integrating banking systems, insurance systems, healthcare systems. And one of the challenges for all of those things that we've grown up with is that the data is always in different formats. And who owns it? And how do I transmit it? And is it regulated like HIPAA for our healthcare or, you know, the SEC for financial services? So there's always been lots of complexity, lots of hair around data. You know, how do I bring all this data together? And when we looked at IoT back in 2014 timeframe, we said, wow, You know, we used to think that 1,000 legacy systems, 1,000 old banking systems, we used to think that that was a big project. IoT is going to have billions of formats of data. And all of that data is going to be subject to, it's got to be safe, secure, somebody owns it, somebody might want to sell it, somebody might want to share it, it's got to be stored somewhere, it needs to be analyzed, all of the same complexity that comes out of your checking account, for example, or your ATM card, all of that complexity is still there, only now the problem is exacerbated beyond comprehension. And so our first foray into the space was, wow, there's a big data play that is about to happen. We're going to have so much more data every year than we've had in the last 50. And you hear that's a soundbite that often comes out, you know. So the first epiphany was, wow, everybody seems to be coming at this from a hardware perspective. Why don't we come in and be the best at the software side of this? So that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is just in the last 7 years, you see Amazon, IBM, Google, Microsoft, all disruptively cheap cloud infrastructure. And you marry that cloud infrastructure with disruptively cheap battery-operated sensors. When we talk about doing something as simple as occupancy in a building, just 7 years ago, you would have been tearing open walls, running power cable, buying expensive proprietary sensors, building expensive proprietary software to run on expensive computers in a data center somewhere. The cost of the project, both in time and money, were so great that nobody would ever think that real-time occupancy data was worth all that effort. All that has changed. So now you have disruptively cheap, disruptively fast sensing as a network, IoT first infrastructure, and you have this software from Microshare that allows you to do that. They're the two things that created combustion. And I tease them apart because we started out as software guys. And I can tell you, Stacy, for the first few years, we were trying to sell our software everywhere. Nobody wanted to buy it. We had two Fortune 500 companies buy it. They did some really esoteric things with it, but they weren't using it as a rinse and repeat IoT product. It wasn't until the perfect storm of marrying cloud, sensor, software, cheap, scalable, that's when the combustion, I think, started in commercial real estate.
Let's talk about those use cases, because with COVID, y'all have dozens of use cases. It can be things like, hey, refrigeration monitoring, monitoring sanitation for bathrooms. You have a solution for counting people in the office, like you were talking about. And a lot of those, or some of those, I feel y'all created during COVID as a response to the pandemic and people coming back to work, people needing to feel safe. What are some of the use cases that you see going forward? Not that people will stop buying those, but we know what COVID has done and the pandemic has done for buildings. So what's next?
So I like that question. And there's so many ways we could start to answer it. I think, again, when we think about IoT from the business person's perspective. So right now, what are the drivers that almost everybody in the world is dealing with from a real estate perspective? There's really three things. There's return to work in whatever that means. So you hear a lot about hybrid working, remote working. Does hybrid working mean that everybody shows up on Wednesdays and nobody's in on Mondays and Fridays? Think about how my real estate behaves. If I'm at 20% of capacity on Mondays and Fridays, 120% of capacity on Wednesdays, am I meeting the business objective? Is the place safe? Do I have seating for that many people to show up? Everybody's worried about return to work, the employee safety and facilities. So that's kind of one big business driver. And Stacy, it varies so much by country and by industry, by culture. It's just, you know, there's so many variables in that. And everybody needs real-time data to understand how to manage through that. All the data we had with our real estate from 2020 and earlier, just throw it away. Because that data was all about 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. None of that's relevant anymore. How do I staff the building? How much energy do I buy? How often do I clean it? How often do I maintain it? How about the security staff, the parking staff? How much food? All of that is now a variable that people are trying to get their heads around. So return to work, big business driver. The second one is real estate right-sizing. And so what's happened now is almost every company is saying, do we need all the space that we have? And if we do need it, what does that space need to look like? Is it offices? Is it shared office work, like a space like WeWork? Is it just conference rooms? Is it bullpens? Is it fun and whimsical and around collaboration? Is it private space? Real estate right-sizing is a really big deal right now. Some of the biggest companies in the world have told me that they're looking to reduce global real estate by as much as 30% in the next 3 years. Some of these companies spend $2 billion a year on real estate. 30% of $2 billion is a big number. How do I even begin to answer that question? I need real-time data. I need to understand exactly how my space is being utilized. And then the third business driver, you've touched on it already, ESG.
And what are some of the ESG use cases?
ESG is environment, sustainability, and governance. And this is all around the movement to a healthier planet, more fair distribution of value, looking at stakeholders, not just shareholders. And so I want to reduce my carbon footprint. I want to run a more efficient building. I want to create an environment where my employees feel safe and heard and have the ability to say something if they see something. I want to be able to report on my metrics. And increasingly, whether it be government regulation, investors pushing down with impact investing, everybody now is being asked to report on ESG. And we're just at the beginning of that. And historically, people thought, well, let me figure out what we're going to do, and then we'll go put some data in place. And Gartner and Forrester started talking about a concept called IoT First. IoT First says, before you even have a conversation around ESG, you need the data. So can I put in this basic IoT first infrastructure? And that gives me the data to get smart around, oh, I see my employees are coming back to work in Lausanne, Switzerland, but they're not coming back to work in Boston, Mass. What's that all about? Oh, I see that more employees are coming in on Mondays and Fridays versus Wednesdays, or the other way around. All of that data matters as I think about how to attract my employees coming back, how to think about what space I need. And while all this is going on, as if that wasn't enough, I'm under constant pressure. How much water am I using? How much electricity am I using? What's my carbon footprint? Am I putting the right filtration systems in place? Is air quality where it needs to be? Because we now know that air quality is a big driver for COVID and for other things that are not good for us. So all of those things combined mean that the business solutions that we're doing today, when COVID first came out, we started out with something called clean equals safe. Let's make sure that space is clean. So essential workers, when they come in, know that you've done everything that you can to make sure that the space is safe for them. But what we morphed into was the idea of EverSmart. And EverSmart is, you know what? This isn't going to end. The analogy I use often, Stacey, it's like 9/11. After 9/11, we never went back to air travel the way it was before then. Because of COVID, we're going to have the exact same permanent infrastructure. But what's it going to look like? Real-time occupancy, air quality, the ability for people to say something if they see something, measure the amount of electricity and keep reducing my power consumption, measure and look for leaks in water, intelligent smoke detection, smart parking. All of these things end up creating a better planet, more efficiency for the companies, and help people begin solving those business problems.
So I love these use cases. I want to kind of circle, go full circle in this interview and come back to this idea of being able to use data across multiple different platforms. And to that end, I know in like the building management space, for example, there's emerging standards. There's like the BRIC Consortium is one of them. There's Haystack. There's some companies that are trying to create standards for the sensors and help build these use cases. With the emergence of these kind of standards, how will they affect your business?
The headline is that the more standards that get developed, the better it is for Microshare. Because remember, I can ingest data from anything and put it into any format. So as these standards evolve, the challenge is always going to be, how do I take all of my legacy data and fit it into the new standard? And oh, by the way, we've lived that in banking and insurance for the last 30 years, and we continue to live it. Whoever thought that our checking account information would suddenly have to be on blockchain? And there's a whole lot of work that needs to happen to get our data securely transformed into these new kinds of financial services formats. Well, IoT is going to follow the exact same pattern. The other thing right now is that unlike banking or governments, where they have a pretty big club and they can enforce what they want to do, there is no clear leader yet in the real estate space. You know, at the highest levels, you've got Google, IBM, Amazon, and Microsoft duking it out from a cloud perspective. You've got lots of competing, I mean lots of competing standards around ESG and sustainability right now. What does it mean to be LEED certified? How does LEED now take into this new available kinds of information? So not only does the U.S. going to regulate, not only might the state of New York regulate, but now New York City is regulating. And so if you own a skyscraper in New York, you've now got to start reporting your metrics to the city. And guess what? It's not the same format as what everybody else is looking for. And so I think there's going to be a lot of wild, wild west going on for the next 3 to 5 years at least. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure that there'll be a traditional winner. I think there might be a couple dozen standards that evolve. So we kind of sit there in the middle and say, bring on the new standards, bring on new sensors, bring on new use cases. Because every time you do that, you're just increasing the complexity of your data challenge. And that's where we shine.
All right. Well, Ron, thanks so much for coming on the show this week.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Stacey. I love the questions. Love what you do.
And that concludes this week's episode of the Internet of Things podcast. Please join us next Thursday, and don't forget to subscribe. And if you can't get enough IoT news, I would love for you to sign up at www.stacyonIoT.com for our weekly IoT newsletter, where we explain all kinds of things that we don't even get to on the show. Once again, thank you for listening, and please subscribe.